Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you Answering the Call, offering a glimpse into the spiritual journeys of local priests, deacons, and religious. And now, Answering the Call with Elizabeth Ficicelli.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 and streaming live on stgabrielradio.com. I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli. And if you've been following this program, you know we've had priests and deacons and religious sisters and brothers as our guests through the years. But today we're going to learn about another vocation that's very important but not fully appreciated or understood, and that is the vocation of consecrated virgin. So with us to talk about this special vocation is someone who recently celebrated 15 years of living this service to our church. Her name is Kathleen Goodyear. She comes from my own parish, St. Pius X in Reynoldsburg. So welcome, Kathleen. I'm so glad to finally get you on the program.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
So, Kathleen, other than being born in Syracuse, New York, you moved to the Reynoldsburg, Ohio area, and that's really what you consider home, right? So let's start there and talk about your family, because I know you come from a family that spawned two priests and a consecrated virgin. So I know that there must have been a pretty strong Catholic foundation there. So why don't you start there and tell us about this family?
Okay, I'm very grateful for my parents, very blessed by my parents, who are very deeply religious. Frank and Regina Goodyear, may they rest in peace. We have Father Bob, who's the oldest, and a.k.a. Big Brother. He's a missionary servant of the Most Holy Trinity. He's down on the Choctaw Indian Reservation in Mississippi.
Wow.
Coming to visit home soon. Can't wait. And I also have Father Michael Goodyear. He is now in Colorado Springs, and I believe he's going to join the diocese soon. And then all the family really is religious. So I have my brother Richard, who very spiritual as well. And my sister Jenny, or Mary Virginia, who passed away. But she was a very good example as well. So I was very surrounded by very deep spirituality and just a wonderful witness from the whole family.
Well, what did your parents do to inspire such a deep faith in their kids?
I think just by their example. My mother, I always came down early morning, and she would be praying the rosary in the dark, you know, by herself. But she would also have so many priests and religious in the home. It was just, you know, natural to have them there. So she had a Columbus Marian Center, and she would welcome anybody into the home, lay or religious, didn't matter. My father was very devotional to St. Joseph and to the Blessed Mother as well. So I just walked by and see him praying the rosary, reading his books to St. Joseph or whatever. He's a very hard worker, and I just, you know, I miss them both, but they are very, you know, very good example for me, and I think that was a seed that started it all.
So the big devotion to St. Joseph and to the Blessed Mother.
Yes.
You can see they were doing a lot to try to create this holy family. So you have this family life at home, very, very strong Catholic family life at home, but you would attend public school through your years growing up. Was that an adjustment to go from this really Catholic household to a public school? Did you feel different from other kids in any way as you went through your schooling?
I did. I kind of felt isolated, but I just kind of had to adjust to it. I mean, I had 1 year at St. Pius, but most of my time was spent in the, you know, Reynoldsburg Public Schools. So,
well, in what way did you feel isolated, do you think?
I think people knew, like, I was Catholic or different. I think even then, like my early years, 9, 10, whatever, I was starting to develop that vocation or spiritual life. So people just, you know, they'd be whispering about anything and anything, you know, whenever they were in school. And then when I would come in the room, it was like, hush, hush, you know, they would just kind of avoid me, you know. So that's, you know, that's okay. But, you know, just I had a few friends, but mostly I was, you know, by myself.
That reminds me of the story of St. Therese, because her sister kind of homeschooled her, but there was a time when she went to a school mm-hmm. for about a year, and she was really young because she was so academically advanced. Mm-hmm. And she writes that it was so hard for her to relate, because these classmates were so into things of the world, and she was so deep in her faith that she felt like she didn't fit in. You
right.
know? So that kind of, your story kind of resonates with that. So how old were you when your two brothers, Bob and Michael, discerned the priesthood and left for seminary?
Father Bob was away when I was growing up, so I didn't see much of him. He was already in the seminary, and so I barely have memories of him at home. You know, he would come home in the summer and help out, whatever, with the family. But And Father Michael, we were very close. He was like 4 years older than I was. So he taught me my catechism, and we grew up together. And then he, at that time, he was at St. Meinrad's. He, you know, like when I was probably 12 or 13, he started to get that, you know, vocation. And, I mean, he knew he had that religious vocation and was exploring the priesthood and spent many years at St. Meinrad's, but then he switched over to Legionnaires of Christ. So, I mean...
How would you say specifically their path going to priesthood and seeing that modeled for you as a younger sibling, how did that affect your relationship with the Lord and your faith?
I think it enhanced it. I mean, I was kind of following Father Michael and Father Bob, but I mean, the whole family was, you know, so religious, and it was almost a natural inclination for me to, you know, look at, you know, the vocations. I thought Carmelites, I didn't even know about consecrated virginity at the time. So I started reading and researching and going on retreats, and kind of helped me along, I think.
Did you have any favorite saints growing up when you were a kid?
I had quite a few, but I love St. Teresa, Little Flower. I think, you know, I always say that prayer, Little Flower in the Sour, show thy power. And, you know, I love the movie. When I was 16 years old, for my birthday, we had the old movie on St. Teresa, and, you know, when she took her vows and everything. I had a party, you know, for St. Teresa, and I was, you know, I think that was that and St. Francis of Assisi, I think, were my two main saints.
Do you think either of them planted seeds for your vocation? Do you think any of them were you know, part of that process for you?
I think so. And I read The Story of the Soul on St. Teresa, and I mean, I just highlighted, you know, everything in that book. But, just a simple way, I thought, you know, and then leaning towards every summer, we would go to the Carmelite Monastery in Traverse City. And I thought for sure I was going to be in that convent. I thought, I loved their singing. I loved, you know, when they would do the Liturgy of the Hours, or we would talk for hours, you know, there and visit. So I was really leaning towards the Carmelites for a long time.
At what point did your parents perceive, or maybe you share with your parents, that you think that you had a calling, and how did they help foster that?
I think they knew before I knew. I mean, I think they kind of saw it, as well as like Father Bob, who, you know, he was one of my references for my consecrated virginity, and I think they really saw at a young age that I was leaning towards a vocation, you know, and I looked at different ones, but I think, you know, just by their example, you know, and I just kind of almost, if you will, following in their footsteps, you know, just, you know, researching and, you know, just asking them questions, you know, it'd be all right, you know, if I would look into, you know, this or that vocation. So, and they would take me and visit, even like when I went to New York, we, you know, went and visited some of the monasteries there. So, I mean, they very encouraged me very highly to, you know, seek it out. You know, it was up to me, but they're right there.
Was marriage ever in the picture for you, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, I wasn't really into dating, you know. I wasn't really interested in that. I was always more reserved into, like, even the single life, or, you know, just looking at the what should I be doing and praying about it. And, you know, I had a spiritual director probably since I was 10 or 11 years old. So, you know, asking them every 2 to 3 months, I would seek advice from a spiritual director.
So, well, your plan then was to graduate high school and enter the convent?
Yeah, I wasn't sure at that time. I knew either like medical field, you know, and in combination really with vocation, which really worked out for me. And so I didn't know for sure. I think when I was 16 or 17, I kind of thought, you know, convents, you know, Carmelites, Dominicans, Renum Christi. So I looked at a lot, and I thought, you know, I wasn't quite ready to commit yet, but I was heading that way.
So you went after high school then you went into the workforce, is
right,
basically,
yes,
what you're saying. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And you're kind of looking at these different, going on retreats.
Yes.
You know, talking to people, kind of discerning. How was it that you discerned it wasn't any of these? Because I guess I think that discerning what's not the right direction is equally as important as discerning what is the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you come to the point where, well, it's not this one, it's not this one? You know, how does one do that?
I was walking and talking with like the Dominican sisters. They actually came to my workplace and talked with me for a while, which is kind of a shocker. But just, you know, talking to them, and also I entered like a Carmelite monastery for a day to see if that's what I really wanted. And I found out, I was kind of in shock from not think I was going to be Carmelite. You know, just knowing, I think more I followed my mother, who was more, she always made phone calls or was working with people all around the country and outside the country. So I thought, well, maybe in that respect, I was, you know, more in the outside world, but still had a vocation, you know, not in a cloister or convent. So I was, you know, one more step to figure it out.
Were you feeling patient in the process, or did you find at times you were getting frustrated, like, come on, God, I'm ready. Why aren't you? Why aren't you revealing it yet?
Yeah, I was a little discouraged, you know. I said, have to take a step back and then say, okay, maybe I got to talk to my spiritual director again. You know, so it just didn't work out. You know, I was in tears thinking, oh, I thought I was going, you know, I thought Lord was leading me this way to the Carmelites, or, you know, this way. Because I spent so many summers visiting the different convents and orders, and the Order of the Holy Angels from Fatima. I had Father Wagner there for a while, who's my spiritual director. But it was hard to have a spiritual director who's like outside the country, you know, so you can't just pick up the phone or write letters or stuff, you know. And I was, what I call, drilled, you know, every time we would meet, you know, we were walking, whatever, just to see what my spiritual life was like every day. So that was good for me to kind of build up, you know, my spiritual life, you know, and find out what I was supposed to do.
We're talking with Kathleen Goodyear. She's a consecrated virgin who's sharing her journey into this unique vocation. And she's our guest today on Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. And I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli. So, Kathleen, how and when did you finally stumble upon the vocation of consecrated virgin?
I was introduced. Father Wagner had another spiritual daughter who was actually in formation for the consecrated virginity. And he recommended I go on retreat, like an informational retreat, which I did. And I got to meet with her. And he suggested I read the book In You Are Christ by Father Thomas Dubay. And so that was very helpful. And then, you know, so when I think I was probably in the 20s, 20s or 30s, that I started realizing that, yes, this is my vocation. It was a long process to go through, but once I went on retreat and read the book and met with someone in formation, and I still keep in touch with her through the USACV, and then I decided, then I took the step and called the diocese, which we've never had a consecrated virgin in Diocese of Columbus. So the bishop had Bishop Griffin at that time had to research a lot to see what is this vocation, you know, what do we do, how we proceed, you know.
Pioneering something new here.
Yeah, and, you know, get a formation director. Sister Joan Harper was helping me out at that time. And so
what was so appealing to you about this particular lifestyle, this particular vocation?
I think living in the outside world, reaching more people. I mean, I know in the convents and, you know, the cloisters or whatever, they do go out amongst the people. But I think it's more I inherited from my mother, you know, just a lot of family plays into this. But you know, she was always reaching out to people and talking to people and being an example. And so as a consecrated virgin, living in the world is a very difficult, I mean, for anybody, I think, but for me, especially, that you're exposed to so many temptations in the outside world, but yet it's such a beautiful vocation. So I think I just had to jump in, if you will, and start proceeding with it.
So you, as you say, you live in the world.
Yes.
You know, but you're consecrated to the Lord, to the church.
Yes.
You are working in the world. So you're, you know, you don't have the support of community. You know, you really are, you know, kind of on your own in that regard. What qualities in yourself did you see that would be a good fit for this vocation?
Living in the outside world, I have a very, my mother, I have like a phone personality, great phone personality, and a good listener. So like where I work in the recovery room, I'm right there, and all my nurses and all everybody just kind of gravitates. So I think that sense of a good listener and being patient with others, and just a smile, like Bishop Griffin and Bishop Campbell say, that, you know, you're in the right place. You know, you're there to reach out to people, as a lot of the different people come from different walks of life as a, you know, a consecrated virgin. But I think working in the outside world, be an example or a light to others, and maybe inspiring them, you know, and just listening, and as well as praying for. And I tell everybody I work with, I'm praying for you for whatever reason, you know. So, and I can still do my prayer life at home or at work. I mean, I carry my rosary in my pocket and my scrubs, you know, pull it out, you know. Mm-hmm. So I have it with me all the time. So I think just working, and we do have support. I mean, we do have, like, my girls. I'm kind of like mother superior to my girls, you know, in this diocese. So getting together, so I count on that support. We mm-hmm. still have support from, you know, my family that, you know, is right 100% behind me in this vocation. So between my work, you know, family and, the, you know, my parish family at St. Pius, you know, I'm able to combine everything, you know, my medical training and my spiritual life, and I'm reaching out to people and able to support myself. So.
Right. I see a lot of similarities between what you're doing and religious life. Like, for instance, as you mentioned, there's a prayer life to this.
Yes.
So, you know, talk a little bit about your prayer commitment as a consecrated virgin.
Okay. Usually we wake up, like a routine for me would be to get up and do my morning prayers. And I love to walk and say the rosary. I mean, if I don't say the rosary, my day's not complete, mm-hmm. you know. And I'll have like a litany of praying for whoever's asked me to pray for, my nurses or my family, or like the Pope's visit, you know, I'll be praying for his safety. And I do like morning and evening prayer. And then when I do mental prayer, I'll pray all the way to work, you know, or I'll listen to St. Gabriel Radio, like Father Ricardo. I love him.
Mm-hmm. We all do.
But, you know, it's basically a lot of mental prayer, you know, and just, you know, made a prayer. I'm walking in the morning, you know, 5-6 o'clock in the morning. I'll just interject, like, thank you, God, for the beautiful stars or whatever. And I'm just so grateful, you know, I have so much, you know, I'm not a millionaire, but I have, you know, my health and I have my family and my prayer life and my vocation. And
another similarity I would see is your total devotion and dedication, that you in every aspect are a bride of Christ too.
Yes.
Just like a religious sister would be. Mm-hmm. You know, you say go on retreats, have spiritual direction.
Yes.
You know, all those kinds of things. You know, by the title of Father Thomas Dubé's book, you know, obviously men can also live celibate lives for the sake of the church, but, and lay men can do that too. They can live a consecrated celibate life. But we're talking right now about consecrated virgins. You belong to something called the Association of Consecrated Virgins.
Yes.
That would be the bigger picture there. Who can and can't qualify for this vocation?
Oh, for one, you have to have, we go through testing, single women are virgins, obviously. They go test through like maturity. It's not most, you know, age, it's more maturity. So I think even considering it, I would just look up a lot of information. But
can you have been married?
No, you cannot be married. You have to be a virgin. I mean, I know those have dated, but, you know, never gone with that. But just someone who has a, you know, a dedicated prayer life, is really able to pursue this, you know, and understand, you know, that, I mean, you do have support, but you're not enclosed or anything in a community. But.
And you don't appear to be wearing anything like a physical garb or anything that indicate any jewelry or anything that's indicating that you're consecrated, or there's no regulations about that, or
no, yeah. We do have our rings.
Okay.
This is actually what I'm wearing now is my mother's wedding band. How I got it, I'm not sure.
Probably,
I mean, you know, because you passed away, and I'm like, well, how did I get it? But it must be meant to be, because inside it says to Jesus through Mary, and that was always my mother's quote. You know, that's always her saying. She signed her letters, you know, and I asked the family for approval. So, you know, we don't wear veils, but we do, you know, have the ring as a sign. You know, exposed to Christ, bride of Christ. So this is always our symbol.
Okay.
You know, we might wear like, you know, a necklace or whatever, but you don't have a habit or anything like that.
Okay. You know? No religious name. You keep your baptismal name?
Right. We don't have any titles. I mean, you know, OCV would be, but we don't have like a sister or, you know, whatever behind our name.
Okay. And what about vows?
We do.
Celibacy, obviously.
Yeah, we don't, obviously we don't do poverty because we have to support ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's mostly obedience to the bishop.
Okay.
And, which we have to meet with twice a year.
Okay.
You know, and just under his supervision and under our spiritual director, we have to have a spiritual director, no matter a priest or sister or deacon or, you know, right now mine is Father Pat Gaughan.
Okay, sure.
And I just love him. We just started, but, you know, we're making progress.
Good.
Because I need all the help I can get, but, yeah. Yeah.
I know him well. He's been on the program. And recently you celebrated your 15th anniversary of being a consecrated virgin. It was celebrated by our bishop, Bishop Campbell.
Yes.
And you had some special guests there at that celebration.
Yeah, we had several. Well, of course, Bishop Campbell was there, and our Father Joe Dury was there. And not Joe Dury, but Father Dury, Dan Dury. And also, I was hoping Father Bob would be there, but none of my brothers, but we had several priests that were there. And the Children of Mary were there. And several, also Molly, who's also consecrated virgin, was there. And a lot of my, you know, some of my family and friends were there as well.
Okay, so talk about, is Molly the only one, or there's other now people going through the formation process, or are fully, is that what the right term would be, profess yourself as a consecrated virgin? What's the finalization of the vocation, if you will?
Just our rite of consecration. Just
okay,
rite of consecration.
Okay.
But we had Molly is one of them, and Joanne, who's in Danville, and Mary was Hodgson was just consecrated recently, and then I think we have another one in formation, so we're growing. But there's a lot of young women out there, I think, you know, if they were interested, should really look it up.
So what's the formation process like, and who oversees it?
Well, we have, I had Sister Joan, who's my formation director, but you would probably reach the vocation office or chancery office. And Deacon Tom Berg would probably be able to help you out with that, as well as Julie, our secretary there in the diocese. So, but you can also, if you need resources or something, do the United States Association of Consecrated Virgins. They have every resource you ever wanted, videos, whatever. But I would definitely, the first thing I would do is, you know, contact the diocese and say, hey, I'm interested in what do I need to do? And eventually they'll lead them, you know, to me, because, you know, if they want to call me or whatever, questions or whatever.
But, okay. And is this vocation of consecrated virgin on the rise, like worldwide, or?
Yes,
you know?
There are several countries now. I was just looking up on our website. There's so many different countries that have like over 300 or so, either in formation or consecrated. So there are a lot out there, and I think it's still in formation. So it is growing, but we need to get the word out, and that's really my mission, is to, you know, talk about the vocation and say, hey, it is a, you know, a very beautiful vocation, and I hope a lot of young women out there look at it, you know, as part of their vocation.
Well, you know, I was thinking about it, that we live in a culture where virginity isn't very popular, and even despised, I would even say, you know, to a large degree. So what do you see is the value of consecrated life or consecrated virginity in today's world?
I think really it's a mirror, what's, you know, for our heavenly journey there. And so I think there's a lot of beauty in it, a lot of graces from it. So I think there's a lot to offer in that. I think, you know, and there is support out there too, if they're thinking about that. So I think, you know, just, I remember the day I was consecrated, when the actual consecration happened, the bells rang, and I'm like, I'll never forget that. I said, wow, you know, and people, you know, it's on video, so I can tell you. But, you know, there's a lot of good things that come out of it. A lot of,
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
When we give our whole hearts to Jesus, the possibilities are endless. You know, as you mentioned before, you live in the world. You need to support yourself. So your particular job is in a hospital setting. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about what you do and how you live your vocation at work.
I am a unit coordinator at Mount Cromley's in the main recovery room. So it kind of intermingles, because a lot of what I do, I answer the phone. We have surgeries coming in right and left, and I communicate with the surgery waiting area. So the families, you know, they're waiting. You know, after a while, waiting gets kind of unnerving in there. Mm-hmm. So I'm constantly communicating with the nurses, with my take charge, with the surgery room and everything. So bringing my prayer life and just my example, or just, you know, just a smile, or just, you know, a prayer or two. So
does it come out, you know, what your vocation is when you're interfacing with families and patients or anything?
I think so. I think. And the volunteers really appreciate me too. They've nominated me for different things, you know, like just being a great place to work, or, you know, and so I think they kind of recognize that there's something different, there's something more. So they all come to me and say, I'm so glad you're here, you know.
And your job, you know, your career job is so such a perfect fit for this vocation, where you're helping mm-hmm. other people, especially people sick and suffering. So is that typical of people like these other women who are now going through the process in the diocese, that they're also, as opposed to maybe just a desk job, that they're in kind of a helping field, or is that kind of typical?
Yeah, there are firefighters, social workers, accountants, nurses, doctors.
Really everything.
Yeah.
No limit. So, you know, we're kind of rounding up this half hour. What advice would you give a woman that might be listening to our program today and thinking, I wonder if this vocation is for me? What would you tell her?
I would say stop, think and pray. Just, you know, take time out of your day, or maybe go on a day of recollection or retreat, or, you know, if you even think, you know, just go to church and pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament, or, you know, contact a diocese and say, I think, you know, I have it, or get a spiritual director. If you don't have one, I would recommend highly to get one and just, you know, talk with him about it, you know.
Wonderful. And eventually, if you do follow that lead, you're probably going to be speaking with Kathleen Goodyear, our guest today, and just obviously very on fire for the Lord and a beautiful example with her unique vocation as a consecrated virgin these past 15 years. I am so glad we finally got you on the program. Can we end with your favorite prayer?
I'd like to say Hail Mary.
Sure, we'll join you.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death.
Amen. Thank you again, Kathleen, for sharing your inspiring journey as we seek to hear and answer God's call in our own lives. This is Elizabeth Ficicelli, host for Answering the Call. Join us Tuesdays and Sundays at 12:30 for another episode. Have a wonderful week. God bless you.
Answering the Call is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of Answering the Call with Elizabeth Ficicelli are available at stgabrielradio.com.
I went to church and just sat there and listened. I really didn't absorb anything. I think I just found myself believing that I didn't need God. I just had everything under control, and church was actually a burden to me. I had this sin that I carried in my heart for a long time, and I told myself for many, many years that the Lord wouldn't forgive me for this. When Father in the confessional says, "Your sins are forgiven," there truly is a feeling of weight lifted off. I don't care if it's two or three little sins that you're carrying, there's a feeling of I can breathe deeply again. I feel pure inside, and I'm ready to come to Mass. You can have a beautiful car, a big fancy home. If you don't have Christ in your life, there's an emptiness that's there. When you come home to the church, you're coming home to a Catholic family where people today just embrace you.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for whatever reason, we invite you to take another look. Visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.